Hey, thanks for joining us for another episode of Divorce Confidential. I'm Michelle Delino, divorce and family law attorney in Washington State. I've been practicing family law for over 14 years, almost 15 years now, and we have seen pretty much everything there is to see in family law. If it has happened, we have seen it. And I'm joined by my co-host, Amy Alpeza. Amy is a certified real estate divorce expert. She works with Windermere, and she knows everything you need to know about real estate, especially if you're going through divorce and separation. So how are you, Amy? How's it going?
Thanks, Michelle. I'm doing wonderful. It's a really interesting time for real estate and the market, and also really interesting time for a lot of my divorcing clients. So I think today we wanted to talk about mediation, and we wanted to give you guys an overview of the different types of mediation because we get this question all the time. And we thought we'd break it down for you. So Michelle.
Yeah, this comes up in like every meetup, every time we meet, it happens. People want to know, what is mediation? What's it about? How does it work? Right?
Right. Yep. And so if you could tell our listeners, would you say there's three different types of mediation? What are the main types that we can
talk? Yeah, I would say there's really four that come up, three main ones, but there's really four. So let's just go through them. I mean, the first one I think is what I would describe as like a kitchen table mediation, where nobody has an attorney, there's no mediator involved. It's literally a mediation between you and your spouse sitting across a kitchen table trying to work something out. That's like one type, right?
Yep.
The second type.
And so do we want
to go ahead?
I was just going to say for, you know, kitchen table, that's probably best for couples who really don't have like children, really don't have a lot of assets. Maybe they haven't been married very long, right? They're just trying to figure out the basics of how do we separate and undo.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's good for most people because you don't know what you don't know, but I do think like, okay, if you were married for a hot minute and you're just trying to, you know, walk through it, then that is one thing. You know, I think at this point, it's kind of like you want to think about what do I know, what do I don't know, and what will happen, right?
Right.
And, you know, so it's like if you're sitting down across from your spouse, you might think you know what to do. But like you said, Amy, if you have any kind of assets or kids, it's probably not for you because you're probably missing some major things. And this is one thing I think to throw out there when we talk about all types of mediation is you don't get a do-over. So if you were to agree to something and sign it, then you're done. And I get a lot of people that come back later and they're like, I didn't know about this or that. I didn't know I could ask for this. I didn't know dividing the assets that way wasn't best for me. Can I do it again? And we're like, no. So
right.
You could do a kitchen table if you've got like nothing to divide, nothing to decide, and you just need to do paperwork maybe. Otherwise, at least talk to somebody before you do it.
Definitely.
Right?
Yep.
Cool. Let's talk about a second type. This is what I call, it's kind of like a hybrid DIY mediation. And with a hybrid DIY mediation, I would say it is basically it is basically a situation where you've got two people, neither one of them has attorneys, but they've found a professional mediator. Sometimes that mediator is an attorney, sometimes it's not. And they go to that mediator and they try to work it out with them in real time. Sometimes they do multiple short sessions. Sometimes it drags on a long time. Sometimes it's just one session. And those mediations are okay for some people, but at the end of the day, your mediator, even if they're an attorney, they're not your attorney and they can't give you advice. They can
right.
just guide you through it. So you guys could come to an agreement that's totally not equitable for you and you wouldn't really need. Then mediations in those settings are also not binding immediately. A mediator will give you like a memorandum of understanding, which is basically, here's what we talked about today. And if you do that and you say, here's what we talked about today, you still have to go to someone to reduce it to writing. And a lot of the times people come to me or my office or other attorneys with memorandums of understanding. And the client's like, is this fair, what we think we agreed to? And then we'll be like, no. And then you're kind of back to square one. So sometimes that can work out if you really have a clear agreement and you just need to work through a few details. But mediations like that sometimes are the ones as well where you have somebody later saying, oh, hey, I didn't know I could do this. You know, I didn't know that I wasn't agreeing to the right thing. What can I do? And there's usually not a lot. So second time I would call like a DIY hybrid mediation because no one has attorneys, but you do have a mediator involved, if
and
that makes sense.
Yes, definitely. So, Michelle, could a mediator be like a financial neutral or a CDFA, which for those of you who don't know what CDFA stands for, it's a certified divorce financial analyst. Is that typically who would do a DIY, joint mediation like that? Or what type of other professional would be in the room?
It could be an attorney mediator. It could be a financial person. It could be any number of people. It could be someone that just wants to call themselves a mediator and maybe took a class. So you really want to be careful with it. I recommend in those situations, I recommend for any divorce mediation to use an actual lawyer, because that is the person that knows the law. And financial people know financials, but they don't necessarily know how those financials apply in court or the law in Washington when it comes to equitable settlements. So yes, some financial people do mediations, but you're probably better served using someone that's an attorney, at least to get some guidance on how to draft your agreement. I've also seen agreements by CDFAs where they're missing like key provisions because they don't know everything to include. So could
Right.
be any kind of person, if that makes sense.
It does. And so with the takeaway with doing a mediation like that is you may end up with a settlement that you're okay with, but you really may end up with an unequitable settlement as well because you're not getting legal guidance from the mediator. Is that right?
And that's exactly right. You might be getting guidance, like you guys could agree to this, but you're not getting, a mediator won't be able to tell you this isn't a good deal for you, or you would do, this is the worst you would possibly do in court, or this is worse than you would do in court. A mediator can't tell you that because they're in neutral in that situation. So that's not really helpful to you. And it's, it creates a difficult situation. Then if you think, oh, I agreed on a 50-50 parenting, I mean, I'm sorry, I agreed on a 50-50 financial division, and then you go and talk to an attorney, and attorney's like, you make way less money. You would never get 50-50. That would be worse than you would do. And
Right.
you don't understand that. And the mediator couldn't tell you that. So that's kind of where a situation like that can be really difficult. And with parenting too. I mean, you don't necessarily know what you should or shouldn't agree to if you don't have somebody that's like advocating for you and actually giving you legal advice. They're giving you guys guidance on how to get an agreement reached and try to help you work back and forth, but they can't give either of you advice, and that can be really problematic.
Got it.
And that kind of takes us to our next two types. One of them is collaborative, and Amy, you've been involved in collaborative cases too. Collaborative, there's like a team, right? And so in a collaborative case, parties have to opt in. And so they basically have to opt in to a situation where they have to opt into a situation. Can we hit pause for a minute? Okay, so let's talk about collaborative mediation. Collaborative mediation is a collaborative case is a process that is a series of mediations usually where you have a collaborative team. And Amy, tell me you've been in collaborative teams. What are the kind of people that are on those teams?
So in collaborative teams, A, you have to opt into it, like you were saying. You also have to, you should screen into it, which means like people who have domestic violence or where there's a, big imbalance of power or control, typically should not be able to screen into collaborative cases. So collaborative cases will include each person's collaborative divorce attorney. They will also include their financial neutral. Typically, they can include a real estate broker such as myself, a certified lending professional who's been trained in the collaborative case. Oftentimes, if there are minor children, it will include a parenting coach. And am I missing anybody here? I think that's.
No, I mean that's about right. I mean, sometimes you'll have like maybe in addition to a financial neutral, your team might decide that you're going to bring in someone to do some valuations. Like sometimes the neutral will help you guys on the division, and then you might be like, oh, and we need to get these accounts valued for separate and community, and you guys will agree on somebody to use for that. So there might be like experts that you agree on in the collaborative container, but the team is pretty much like you said, real estate person, financial person, sometimes a parenting or therapy person with dealing with kids, and then each party has a collaborative attorney. And when you enter a collaborative process, both parties sign what's called a collaborative participation agreement, where you say, hey, we're opting into this and we're agreeing to do basically everything in the case in what we call the collaborative container. And in the collaborative container, that's where all the negotiations happen in that in those mediations. It's a meeting with like everybody all at once. It's not a situation where you're in a separate room with your attorney. So all advice and all everything is given in the open. And it's also a process that agrees that no one will go to court, which can sound very attractive, but it also means you don't have a lot of recourse if you're not getting full transparency from people. So this kind of mediation is good for certain people that maybe are on relatively equal footing. There are certain types of cases that automatically should screen out from collaborative, and that is situations where there's domestic violence, substance abuse, control issues like coercive control, and issues where somebody might be engaging in like emotionally abusive behavior. All of those kinds of cases are not appropriate for collaborative. But I would say some people also too, if they're not in a hurry, I would say people that are not in a real hurry, wouldn't you say that? Because collaborative cases can take longer. So if you're not in a hurry, it might be an option for you, but you need to understand you have a lot of people to get together and meet.
They definitely can. So, and I've had, and I think the biggest hang up with collaborative cases about timing is that you're having to try to schedule 10 people, or maybe it's just, you know, 4 or 6 people at the same time to be in the same room or to be on a Zoom call. And I mean, as you know, it's really difficult to coordinate schedules with that many people involved. So that's part of what takes a lot of the time. And then also just having so many people involved versus just the clients and their attorneys.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think too, I mean, I don't like to discourage people if they really want to go the collaborative route. But what I would do is really evaluate your situation and ask if you're going to go collaborative and you're meeting with an attorney to discuss it. I would ask them, like, how long do you think this is going to take? Do you see any red flags or any issues after discussing my situation with me that you think might be a barrier to the collaborative process? Because here's the kicker is that, like, if you have to start over if it doesn't work, and you both have to get new attorneys and start this process over. Right. So sometimes we have people come to us where collaborative's been going on for like 2 years and they're just fed up. And they have stayed in it because they didn't want to start over. And now they're at the point where they kind of have to get resolution. And they feel like all that time and money was wasted. So while it works for some people, I think you need to ask your attorney like the hard questions in the beginning and determine whether it's really for you. So,
yeah.
The last kind of mediation that is, I think, the most effective, I just did one yesterday, actually, is attorney-led mediations that are called shuttle mediations. And these are mediations where you have one party in one room with their attorney, the other party in the other room with their attorney, and the attorney mediator actually shuttles back and forth between the two rooms. So you'll never see the other party, and you have the ability to really get legal advice in your own forum, like while you're going through it in real time, which I think is so super important. And you know, your mediator is going to go back and forth. And in these kind of situations where both people have counsel, the mediator can do what's called an evaluative mediation. And they don't really do these. They can't do these when you don't have counsel. And the reason why is because they can't be seen as giving you legal advice. So in an evaluative mediation, the mediator will be like, you have your attorney for legal advice, and the other party has their attorney. I'm an attorney, but I'm not your attorney. But given their experience and the way that they know that these things work, they will evaluate the two positions throughout the day and be like, here are the things that you probably need to worry about in your case. Here are the things you need to worry about in your case. And they do that in a way that helps the parties come closer together and reach settlement. So you could have two people that are like completely 180 degrees different. It's been a totally like high conflict case, and we're able to get resolution. I find that shuttle mediation with a good mediator resolves more than 90% of cases. And for a lot of people, it's the last stop before trial because it's required in most cases. And an effective mediation, you get the opportunity to vent, to get legal advice in private, and you get to hear from a third party, the mediator, you know, strengths and weaknesses, and really kind of work out offers in real time with them and your attorney. So it's a very valuable process. Not that the others aren't, but it is the most effective when you look at like the data for the types of mediations that resolve cases. Shuttle mediation in one session is by far and large the most effective by the numbers, and in practice. It's better for clients too, because they really feel like they got to be heard. They got to talk in a safe space. They didn't have to try to make deals sitting across the street from them, the table from the person that they're getting divorced from, which can be really emotionally charged.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And I think the thing about shuttle mediation, would you say that most, well, do we have a statistic that how many, you know, the percentage of divorce cases use shuttle mediation over the other type?
You know, I would say, I mean, in litigation practice, it's the more traditional style of mediation. And so, like, for example, if you were looking at where we practice, like King County, most the vast majority of people that are represented by attorneys use shuttle mediation to settle their case. So it's probably, I think the last thing that I heard was around 80% or more. And there's no coincidence that 90% or more of divorce cases don't go to trial. So I mean, it's the most effective. And a lot of time people will come to us when they've tried the other kinds of mediation, they failed, and we'll be able to resolve it for them this way. So, you know, you really kind of, I think to sum it up, you really have to think about what's best for me in my situation and how much support do I need? And I think it's, you know, divorce, like our friend Kim Mosca, who's a financial advisor, she always tells us divorce is a time like to be selfish and to do what's right for you. And so that means leaning on people that know and trying to get the best settlement possible, because you can't go back and do it again. And so a shuttle format really allows for that. I mean, a collaborative format can too. It's just a different set of rules and not the same level of privacy and negotiation and not having court as an option, which sometimes having court as an option can force people to reach a resolution because they don't want to go that route, right?
And trial's expensive, right? I mean, I think the last thing you want to do in any type of litigation is end up in trial.
Yes.
And because it's just, it's so time consuming, it's very expensive. And oftentimes, you know, the outcome is a lose-lose for both parties, right? Sometimes.
Yeah. And I was just telling a client this yesterday, and so is our mediator, that when you go into court, it doesn't matter how good your lawyer is or how good you think your position is, you're giving up the control to someone else and about your family. And that can be extremely difficult. So, I mean, I could go into court and say, here's our position. This is my presentation of our case, and everything could look good. The other person could think they're doing the same. And the court could look at both of our positions and be like, yeah, I'm going to do something in the middle. I'm going to do something different. And we have no control over that. So it's like mediation gives you that opportunity to really be part of the solution and to have to shape your own settlement. You can't be forced. I should also have said this. You can't be forced to agree to anything in mediation. So it's, you know, voluntary that you do it. And sometimes someone will be like, oh, I was forced to sign this. I'm like, well, no, you weren't. You signed it for whatever reason.
Yeah.
But no one else stood over you with a pen and was like, sign it, sign it. Like it's not that way. It's not a compulsory process.
Right.
But, you know, really good mediator I know always says that nobody walks away from a successful mediation feeling like they just hit a home run. Like both people have to compromise. So you have to be willing to go in good faith and compromise, and you have to be willing to trade maybe getting your home run for feeling like you got to help shape your settlement and having control over the outcome. Otherwise you go to court, anything can happen, anything at all.
And you always say, you know, you could walk into three different courtrooms with different judges and end up with three completely different.
Totally. And they would all be right. Yes. It's exactly true. I always say that because it's like you could go down to the courthouse and there's three courtrooms and on the floor there, and you could go into all of them with the same set of facts and be like, here's what happened. And you could get three different rulings. You probably would get three very different rulings. Mm-hmm. And there's so much discretion given to family law judges to kind of do what they think is right within a certain framework that they would all be right. So you don't know what you're going to get. It's like you might have a range of what you could get, but you really don't know.
Right.
So it's like you try to come up with a settlement that makes the most sense. Try to use the forum of mediation that works best for you. And some cases won't settle a mediation. You'll end up in a trial, but most do. I think it's just a question of finding the right avenue for you and, you know, committing to that.
Yep. Yep. Awesome. Well, I think this was really great overview. And if you guys have any follow-up questions about the different types of mediation, or you want to learn more about the services that Michelle and her team provide, or ways that other professionals can assist you through mediation, reach out, direct message us. You have our contact information. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for joining us. We'll see you guys next time. Take care.